No, Andre, listen, it's not happening. Tell me it's not so, man. Even though you came out here with him, you don't have to leave with him. It's not happening.
Thank you, Anselm Chalmers.
He's got one more thing to say to you, Hogan.
Look at me when I'm talking to you. I'm here for one reason. To challenge you for a world championship match in the WrestleMania.
From Television City in Hollywood.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Discretionary viewer participation is advised for the following professional wrestling exhibition.
Greetings from Allentown is taped in front of a live studio audience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winston, and today, this will be... I didn't really come up with a name for this particular show. I'm just going to call it Best of the Heel Turns, Volume 1. Heel turns that have happened on episodes of Greetings from Allentown that I've covered, but from long ago. I'm not just taking stuff from 2 or 3 weeks ago or whatever and just throwing it out there again just so that I could talk about it. I'm talking stuff that I did over a year ago for the most part. I'm going to be looking at 3 different heel turns that I covered in the first 14 episodes of this show before a lot of you might have started listening to it. But let me get in my plugs first. You can email the show, greetingsfromallentown@gmail.com, facebook.com/greetingsfromallentown. On Twitter, give me a follow, @GFAllentownPod. And you are probably listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed in association with Place to Be Nation. Go to placetobenation.com/Amazon to support the Place to Be Nation with your Amazon purchases. And I say you're probably listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed because there's a larger audience with a network. And when you start out a podcast, you know, you have to build an audience somewhat. And I know that there are certainly early adopters of listening to this show out there who have been listening before I was on PWO. So these things are all kind of pulled from that, where I covered 3 different heel turns. And they would be Andre the Giant turning on Hulk Hogan, culminating in the Piper's Pit on the February 7th, 1987 episode of the Superstars of Wrestling. That would have been episode number 4. Then in episode number 5, I covered the infamous barbershop segment where the Rockers finally split after a lengthy teasing of it for a few months leading up to it. Although, as I recall, there was quite the delay between when it was taped and when it actually aired. It was taped the night before the Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view, but did not actually air until a week before the Royal Rumble. So that's a good 5 or 6 weeks, because when you're doing it around Christmas, sometimes it can wreak havoc with things. And then the Larry Zbysko turning on his mentor, Bruno Sammartino, which is going to be the lengthiest segment on this show and will come last. That was in episode number 14, so only a couple of shows before I joined the PWO feed. I know you might have been expecting no show this week, and I guess this isn't a new show per se. I'm just kind of repurposing. Like, I'm a clip show for like a sitcom. I mean, you know I love my old sitcoms, and you heard at the top of the show I played the Night Court theme because we lost Harry Anderson earlier this week at the age of 65, far too young. Also was Harry the Hat on Cheers as one of those guys who would always get one over on the Cheers bar, kind of like Gary's Old Town Tavern would always screw over Cheers in some way in some sort of competition. I've been, you know, just recharging the batteries. This time of year at my work, I don't know what it is. There's no specific thing. I can't point to what it is in mutual funds because there's nothing. I'm not someone who's out filing people's taxes or anything. That's not what I do. I know it is tax season, and yes, I could have done an episode centered around IRS, but I've talked about that guy enough, and I already did the best IRS thing I could have possibly done when he beat the hell out of Chief J. Strongbow in Tatanka and tore up the headdress. So that's that's all in the past. So I don't know what it is about work for me this time of year, but it, you know, I did take one day off on Friday, which was met with talk from the client of, well, gee, I hope you don't take another day off again in a while. I'm like, oh, thanks. Like, yeah, that's just what I want to hear from people is I take one day off in the first day off I've had in 4 months, and I come back, and you're like, gee, I hope you don't take another day off again soon. Like, give me a break. It's like, no wonder why I'm like frantically looking for some other job out there, even if it's within the same company, just in a different department where I can actually take a day off and not have to panic about stuff like that. But on my day off, I recharged, as I said last week. I had a weird schedule where from Thursday to Sunday, I was to go to either a Boston Bruins game, which would be Thursday and Saturday, both playoff games that they won against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So my predictions on the NHL playoffs that I did last week are pretty hilarious if you go back and listen to them, like Toronto in 5, Los Angeles in 6. I mean, Los Angeles has already been eliminated in 4 straight by Vegas, so kind of funny there. As for baseball, well, I didn't even bother to go on Sunday because it was 34 degrees and raining. And I love baseball, but I'm not going to drive 40 miles into Boston, fight, you know, the people with the Boston Marathon for parking because a lot of the garages would be filled up and that sort of thing. I know the deal on the weekend of the Boston Marathon, how it goes. But I did go on Friday, where it's such an embarrassing display by the Orioles against the Red Sox, which, you know, I suppose it's payback for years of, they've done very well against the Red Sox at Fenway Park. But I did get to meet up with the voice of Greetings from Allentown, Keith Langston, before the game. I don't know why I didn't just like take a picture of us and post it on the Twitter account. That would have made sense. He was just sitting out in the no alcohol section out in section 33, which fittingly enough is my favorite section in the ballpark. And I'm over in section 10 in, like, first of all, home plate was blocked by a pole in the seat that I had to be in because the row was inexplicably full. I don't know how that was because there was empty seats, but it was so weirdly scattered I couldn't get to them because when I came into the row, there was 4 people, and then it filled up. And I was on the end of the row. However, there was a concrete thing to my left, so between separating that and the next section over. So the only way out was to go all the way down the row, which I want to say was like 16 seats or whatever, so to make people stand up. And by the third inning, I had just had enough and decided to walk around the concourse and just, you know, have a 1,000-yard stare straight ahead because I didn't really want to spend all the money on beer. I felt like Job from Arrested Development. You know, I just wanted to say I've made a really big mistake. But, you know, rectified that by not going on Sunday and eating $60 worth of tickets, which I was more than happy to do since I just went to a bar in the afternoon and watched the Celtics playoff game, much, much closer to home. So back to the topic of this show with great heel turns. Heel turns always kind of make me somewhat emotional, and I don't know if it's my commitment to kayfabe that I try to maintain. Yeah, there are some heel turns that you just don't give a crap about. And, you know, there's probably so many of them to really just sort of name across history. The most recent one is this Shinsuke Nakamura one on SmackDown, where he's basically been turned into China, which is weird. Like, you know, he's from Japan, but they're turning him into China, where all he does is hit people in the nuts now. Like, oh, great. That's great. I can't wait to start watching SmackDown again in 6 weeks because the roster looks really good. I'm not going to watch it until after the New Girl has completed its run. I've sat through 6.5 seasons of it, and I'm going to see it through to the end. But sometimes I'm left feeling bad, like, aw, why'd you have to be like that or anything like that? You know, even in, like, the local promotion, I you know, when somebody turns heel and chaotic, I get kind of an emotional tug or whatever. I don't know. Again, it might just be the commitment The Andre one here, I mean, it might be a deal where people actually remember where they were when they were watching it. It's carefully built. That's one of the most important things of a good heel turn, is if you build up to it in a careful and thoughtful manner. And that is what all three of these have in common. And I spent a lot of time talking about the build-up with Larry Zbysko and Bruno Sammartino leading to that match. You see the match in the highlights when WWE shows it in their classics or whatever. You'll see the match, but it's good to have the context of what led up to it. It's not like all of a sudden one day, like, oh, Bruno is facing Larry next week on Championship Wrestling, and that's that. Like, no, this was like a 5-6 week thing that started at the end of December, beginning of January 1980, December 79, beginning of January 1980. And over the weeks, they would do one little more thing. You know, just one thing each week. Either Larry would be on TV or they would talk to Bruno about it, and Bruno would kind of, you know, whatever. Andre, same thing, started with the suspension angle the year before. I'm not entirely sure that that would have had anything to do with the heel turn, but in terms of overturning the suspension, the way they did it certainly had an impact into building to Hogan and Andre and some of the intrigue, such as Andre was not at the hearing, but Bobby Heenan was. Like, I wonder what that could mean. And then the Rockers one was a little bit more in your face, where you could see where it was going. Yeah, they did try to play some mind games a little bit, like Gorilla Monsoon screwing up at Survivor Series 91 and telling us that Marty Jannetty was trying to not get in the ring or something when Sean was actually hot-dogging it. So maybe they were trying to camouflage who they were going to turn in that case. But after a while, it became clear that Sean was the one who felt like he was aggrieved, and we all know how it ended up in the barbershop. But I am going to describe it as described in these earlier episodes coming up. You could hear kind of how much of a different show Greetings from Allentown was earlier on. It really was not until episode 5 that I started to figure out Audacity and how to get audio at least somewhat correct. I mean, with experience, if you're ever looking to start a podcast, my advice is always to just screw around with as much of the audio stuff in whatever program like Audacity that you'd be using, and eventually you'll find your way. I mean, I'm not the most tech-savvy guy, but I did figure out Audacity after a period of probably about 7-8 weeks, because there was before I ever did a show, I did a couple of practice podcasts, which those would be interesting if I went back and listened to those after about 15 or 16 months. I think one of them is the Championship Wrestling, where they reveal that Hogan has beaten the Iron Sheik for the title. That would have been January 28th, 84. I should go back and listen to that. Or the one I did about the Bruins, where I thought, well, maybe I'll do a hockey podcast, but you know, I don't think so. So these are the best of the heel turn. And no, this is not like a podcaster heel turn. I'm not creating some sort of persona for myself. I'm not a complete asshole like Peter Rosenberg, who is just going to sit here screwing around on my phone and playing Nikki Bella's theme song every 5 seconds. I'm sorry, that's stuff that actually happened on the podcast Cheap Heat several years ago, and I'm the only person who actually can remember anything that has happened on that podcast 20 minutes after they've listened to it, so whatever. And that was just me wanting to get in my cheap shot at that guy, because he sucks and literally ruins every piece of WWE programming he appears on. So, now that I've taken my shot there, without any further ado, just going to throw it right in. Best of the Heel Turns, Volume 1. Now it's time for perhaps the most famous Piper's Pit, where nobody gets hit with a coconut, and probably even more famous than that. We have Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura, who have both promised to bring their man to Piper's Pit to talk things out. And that would be Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Now let's go back to 86 and talk about where Andre was, because like Piper and like Ventura, Andre was at WrestleMania 2, winning the Chicago portion's Battle Royal with all the NFL players. And he took off because he was not really in any sort of condition to work a regular schedule. He worked with Akira Maeda in Japan in a rather infamous shoot match that, well, it turned into a shoot, where Maeda just kind of kept kicking his legs because Andre, I guess, was drunk and uncooperative, which I suppose you can be if you were a guy his size. He did come back to the WWF in the summer, mainly to work the machines angle, which started with Andre being suspended by President Jack Tunney at the behest of Bobby the Brain Heenan for, quote, no showing a scheduled tag team match against Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. So what happens is, all of a sudden, this new team from Japan, the Machines, which was a ripoff of an existing group of machines in Japan, in reality, it was actually Blackjack Mulligan as Bill Eadie, who would later go on to be Demolition Axe, was Super Machine, a kind of wink and a nod to his days as the Masked Superstar. And Big Machine was none other than Blackjack Mulligan. And the third member of the Machines was Andre the Giant. And it was pretty clearly Andre under the mask, but they would never really have him talk. There was one instance where he did talk, and you pretty much left no doubt. But hilariously, the babyface announcers like a Monsoon or whoever would kind of leave it up in the air. Well, it could be Giant Baba, which is entirely laughable, because if you've ever seen Giant Baba, they have two completely different bodies. I mean, Andre is definitely a lot thicker, but nevertheless, the Machine's angle kind of ran its course. It was not particularly successful, and Andre wasn't even really a big part of it. Most of the time, he wasn't even in the matches. It was either a tag match with him at ringside, or he just wasn't there at all. Eventually, they just started subbing in random other machines, such as the Piper Machine, the Hulk Machine, the Animal Machine, and you can figure out who those guys were. So Andre kind of faded out there for a while, and he was still, quote, under suspension in storyline. When we get to November, Jack Tunney comes on WWF television and announces that Andre the Giant has been reinstated effective immediately. What I can tell you is that Andre was not at the hearing and Bobby the Brain Heenan was. And that was definitely designed to add intrigue to it, because it would make you think, well, why the hell was Andre reinstated if he wasn't there and Bobby Heenan was? And if you could really read between the lines of that, you could perhaps see what was coming down the road. So later on, Andre does an interview from London with some dude from, I believe it was Sky, when I think they were in their infancy. I can't remember the guy's name. And he just says, it's great to be back. At this point, Jesse the Body, who plays a larger role than might be remembered in all of this, he decides he smells a rat. So he's on TV, and he vows to get to the bottom of this, and he asks Andre what's going on, and Andre tells him that it's none of his business. And Jesse's just kind of backs off there for a bit. But it seems like, you know, something is definitely afoot. Jesse was definitely on to something, and it made him look very smart, as it turned out. At least, you know, he made the character look smart. So we jump ahead, and Andre was actually supposed to return to the ring for a January 3rd, 1987 show at the Meadowlands in New Jersey. It was a television taping, and there was to be a dark match main event where Andre would team with Hulk Hogan against the Honky Tonk Man and Macho Man Randy Savage, which is a most interesting team. There's a promo out there of Hogan and Andre promoting this match, which got scratched as Andre was subbed out in favor of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And that match is available on YouTube. I believe Richard Land's YouTube channel has the entire January 3rd, 1987 television taping. It's very interesting to watch because it has the taping in order from start to finish. Because, of course, it ended up as episodes of Superstars through the course of January, but it also has the dark matches as well, which ended up being international exclusives or whatnot. Now, January 17th, 1987, on the Piper's Pit, there's a giant trophy out on the stage, and it is awarded to Hulk Hogan for being WWF champion for 3 years. They were nearing the third year anniversary of his title win. He comes out, he makes his usual speech, and Andre the Giant comes walking out. And all he says is, 3 years to be a champion is a long time. And then he just turns around and leaves. I'm like, okay, that's a little weird. Next week, we have another trophy presentation out there. And this one is going to Andre the Giant for being undefeated for 15 years, which is not entirely true. In the WWF canon, he perhaps was undefeated, never pinned or never submitted during that time. But he had, in reality, several losses, including to Antonio Inoki earlier. I believe it was in 1986. But put it this way, Andre had lost matches during that time. So he's awarded a trophy, and it's a smaller trophy than what Hogan had gotten the week before. And it's certainly noticeable. They were both very large trophies. There's no question about it. But Andre's trophy was definitely smaller. And during the presentation, Andre doesn't get to say anything. And Hogan just comes marching out and gives a fired up speech saying that Andre the Giant is number one in WWF. Blah, 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 blah. And then Andre just turns around and leaves, which was probably the right thing to do, because I'd be a little pissed off if somebody was giving me an award and then somebody came. Hogan, that was really probably the inspiration for the the Kanye West interrupting Taylor Swift at that award show. It's like, we give this award to you, Andre, and then Hogan is up there. I'm going to let you finish, but Andre the Giant is the greatest of all time. Well, you know, that's probably the only time you'll ever hear a comparison with Hulk Hogan and Kanye West. But so the next week, Jesse Ventura smells a rat, and he goes on Piper's Pit and says he thinks that his sources are telling him something's afoot. He doesn't know what, but he decides we should get Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant together. And he vows, he says that Andre owes him a favor, which I've always wondered what the nature of that favor was that Jesse did for Andre. Maybe probably got a couple barrels of wine for him, a couple cases of, you know, beer, who knows. And he asked Roddy Piper to go get Hogan for the following week, which was interesting in the way they did that, because at the end of the show, they show Piper in the dressing room asking Hogan to come back on the show next week. And again, they always had the kind of the underlying tension between Hogan and Piper there. Yes, they did tag up on shows around this time, but you know, they were not playing grab ass with each other all of a sudden, which is good. I like the fact that they kind of kept something there where, yes, these guys were enemies. They did face off in the first WrestleMania. So they vow to bring Andre and Hogan, but there would be a surprise guest on this day. They come out, they argue, and Piper says, I got my man, and Hulk Hogan comes out. And Jesse says, he's impressed, but he don't impress easy. And he starts into the introduction for Andre, and he does the 7'4" and Q. You look at the doorway there. Bobby the Brain Heenan comes walking through. And the crowd for this, it's very interesting. I mean, they were generally much quieter and more respectful. They'll listen to what Piper had to say in these segments, but they went deathly quiet when Bobby the Brain walked out onto that set. And Andre is behind him, and poor Andre, you know, he's a huge dude. He can't
He can't get good clothes or anything like that. He can't get a jacket that buttons all the way around because he has trouble trying to button it at one point. And part of the reason for that is he's got basically sweats. He's either got sweat stains on his tits or he spilled something and then, but he can't change his shirt because he probably only got one shirt because where the hell are you going to get an 8XL shirt, you know, on short notice if you spill something? So Andre's got like what looks like sweat stains over his breast area, and he stands there next to Heenan, and Hogan is beside himself. And Hogan, not the greatest actor in the world, he does his best here with the, what are you doing with him? What? You're the one who taught me about respect for the fans, to do things for the kids. And Heenan, at a point, interrupts and says, I am so sick of what you've done. You've laughed behind this man's back. You never once offered him a title shot. To which Hogan interrupts, but never says, oh, I did offer him a title shot, because it's the truth. The actual truth is, if you go back, there's an interview somewhere on 1984 WWF television where Andre is asked why he doesn't want to go for the world title. And Andre says, I'm just happy being the giant. So that was kind of something that stood. I mean, he was definitely, of course, the special attraction and didn't need a title or anything like that. So Hogan is so distraught here that he actually grabs the lapels on Andre's, you know, as kind of a, Andre, please, please, this can't be happening. And Andre, take your hands off of my shoulders. It's very hard to understand what Andre was saying. I don't know how much they looped his Princess Bride dialogue, because, of course, that was another big part of his 1986, was going over to Europe and filming the Princess Bride as Fezzik the Giant, one of Wally Shawn's henchmen in that film. I love the Princess Bride. And Andre probably maybe the best wrestler performance in a movie. I don't know. I do like Terry Funk in Roadhouse, but I digress here. So Andre has definitely established himself. Take your hands off of me. And Heenan says he's here for one reason. And Andre says, I'm here for one reason, to challenge you for a world championship match at WrestleMania. And Hogan, this can't be happening. This can't be happening. He's actually doing a good job expressing fear that he doesn't want to face Andre. He thought we're friends. We're friends, Andre, please. And Heenan with the money line, you don't believe it? Maybe you'll believe this, Hogan. And Andre grabs the Hulkamania shirt and tears it off him. Not the traditional way that Hulk would tear his shirt off. And along the way, he grabs Hulk's crucifix on him and rips that off as well, ends up scratching Hogan on the chest, and the trickle of blood is going down, and Piper can't resist saying, you're bleeding, which I'm sure Vince was thrilled about, you know, the pointing out that, hey, everybody, there's blood on Saturday morning TV. It was an accident, and of course they weren't gonna reshoot the angle for it, and in retrospect it was a beautiful thing that happened. It was actually rather serendipitous because of the symbolism of him ripping off the cross and then cutting Hulk Hogan, albeit a little bit, on the chest. And that, my friends, is how you fill a football stadium for your big show. It's as simple as you take a world champion and you have him hold the belt for 3 years, and then you take another guy and you build him up to the point where you can plausibly say, oh, he has not lost for 15 years, and you have the undefeated guy turn on the champion. It's money every time. It's just good science. Hogan did not actually accept the challenge here, so this would be kind of a talking point. I feel bad because there are still two more matches on this show, and how the hell are you going to be able to follow this? But what will happen is Hogan will have to come back on to Piper's Pit the following week. And in his usual subtle fashion, as Piper is trying to get an answer out of him, Hogan would say, yes, in response to the challenge of Andre the Giant. So We're off and running. Try to fill that Pontiac Silverdome for WrestleMania 3.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
And now it's time for the Barbershop with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, the Rockers. Barbershop, of course, hosted by Brutus the Barber Beefcake. And Shawn and Marty are here to try and settle their differences once and for all. And this was so beautifully done on two different levels. So we're going to kind of take it from the Rockers' breakup perspective, and then we'll get to Bobby Heenan's masterful commentary in just a minute. The Rockers in 1991, and we're going to have plenty of chances to talk about the Rockers in their first few years in the WWF in future episodes. But 1991 started out very, very good for them. They had a match at the Royal Rumble against the Orient Express that, by all the star rating people, is at least a four-star match and is definitely one of the best pay-per-view tag matches of the era in WWF. At the WrestleMania 7 show, they opened against the Proto Faces of Fear, Haku and the Barbarian, and got a very good match there, too. So the thought was maybe they would be on their way to the tag title, but it didn't quite work out that way because come the summertime, they're not even on the SummerSlam card, which to me is a bit of a mystery and probably would signifies that perhaps there was an injury there. Because there are no results for the Rockers between the middle of July until early September. There's only one match, and that is in Orlando, Florida at the beginning of August. But so they weren't working at that point. When you get down to the fall, and you start seeing some tensions with them, starting at the Survivor Series. And we're going to take three flashpoints here. At the 91 Survivor Series, the Rockers are in the Survivor match, and Gorilla Monsoon completely screws up on commentary what he was supposed to kind of be putting over, that Shawn was hot-dogging it and staying in the ring, and Gorilla on commentary is saying, Marty doesn't want to tag into the match. And when you watch that match, it kind of seems odd given, you know, what we know happened. But there was definitely tension, some pushing and shoving between them. There was a miscommunication spot, and neither one of them ended up surviving the match. Later, in December, on Primetime Wrestling, and this match is very interesting for those who followed Shawn Michaels' career all the way to the end. There is a primetime match between Ric Flair in one of his early matches against Shawn Michaels. And it's quite funny because, of course, that would be the final match for Ric Flair at WrestleMania 24. And what happened there was you had Marty Jannetty at ringside. There's a spot where Michaels gets dumped out of the ring and he's pretty much out of it and he's laying there. Jannetty picks him up in a fireman's carry and rolls him, his lifeless body, into the ring. So Flair just kind of looks at it and decides, you know what? I'm going to go for the pin, but because I'm Ric Flair and I'm a complete dick, I'm going to put my feet on the ropes at the time, too. So Flair gets the win. Shawn is not happy about the fact that Marty rolled him back into the ring to take the pinfall. And perhaps that's justified. Perhaps they're trying to build a little bit of suspense as to who's going to be turning on who here. You could kind of get the sense that Michaels was going to be the guy, even though the signals from commentary were perhaps a little bit mixed. And late December, on Superstars, the Rockers got a World Tag Team Championship match against the Legion of Doom, a very rare face-versus-face match. And it only ran about 5 or 6 minutes, and the end of the match, the Rockers, everybody was in the ring at the same time. Hawk was knocked out of the ring, and Animal had Marty Jannetty picked up, and Shawn drop-kicked Animal in the back, who fell forward and landed on Marty Jannetty and got the pin, 1-2-3. And Sean was not happy about Marty getting pinned there. And that was about 2 weeks before this, so now they are in the barbershop to try and settle things out. And the way they do it is they're, you know, there's definitely some tension there. Marty Jannetty says, you know what, I'm going to turn my back, and if you want to walk away, walk away. So what you think is going to happen is that Michaels is going to nail him from behind, but he doesn't. He goes up, grabs his shoulder. Oh, you almost think he's going to hit him again, but then decides to shake his hand. They hug, pause a beat. Michaels gives him the tap on the chest, which is probably a signal, 1-2-3, and then bam, the super kick. And it's often thought that he was super kicked through the barbershop window, but no, the super kick came first. But he lands the super kick on him and then runs over to him and picks him up and then rams his head through the barbershop window, which was quite a shocking moment. But there were all kinds of shocking moments on WWF TV. You had during this time period, you had guys getting locked in caskets. You had guys getting bit by cobras. You had all sorts of weird crap happening. So what's a guy getting thrown through a window? I mean, this was nothing compared to what happened with Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle in that match at the King of the Ring 2001. And as if that wasn't enough, Sean grabs the issue of WWF Magazine that happened to be lying there with the Rockers in the center. And there was an article, I guess, about their tensions or whatnot. And the middle of the magazine was a perfect split between where Sean and Marty was. So Sean looks into the camera and says, "Is there a problem with the Rockers, Jack?" And he didn't say Jack, but that would be a staple of his later promos. And he channels his inner Sinead O'Connor and rips up the magazine and takes the half with Jannetty and throws it at him. And I thought that was very well done. And then he just kind of, you know, tosses his own picture aside. And they show a replay of Jannetty from the other side of the barbershop window, which, I don't know, some people might say that was exposing the business. Why the hell would they have a camera on the other side of the window? But, you're just doing television there. And now Heenan's role in this, he is friggin' incredible. I mean, January 1992, Bobby Heenan might be the greatest month in history for any wrestling commentator of all time. And I know that's boiling and drilling things down awfully specific, but when you consider his performance during the Royal Rumble match freaking out for Ric Flair, and then you factor in the Rockers split, which took place a week beforehand, Heenan, early on in the interview, he's saying, they need each other. They need each other. And when they shake hands, he says, told ya, one without the other isn't any good. And right as he finishes that sentence is when the super kick lands. And Heenan says, oh, I knew he was going to do that. I just knew he was going to do that. He doesn't need Jannetty. I've been saying that off and on. And it's so hilarious, but it doesn't take away from what's happening on screen. He's just coming across as a weasel. I mean, that's why he is the weasel. But it's just so unbelievably brilliant. But he's not even done with that. There's plenty more. When Jannetty gets thrown through the window by Shawn Michaels, this is crazy. He said, did you see that? Jannetty tried to dive through the window to escape. What an act of cowardice. And Gorilla is so outraged, but oh, blind. And Heenan does express that maybe Marty Jannetty will not be ready for the Royal Rumble since he's busted wide open there, and in fact he would be replaced in the match by Nikolai Volkoff, of all people. I don't want to sell Monsoon short. His indignant response to what Sean did also made this a very, very strong segment here, but it worked on a couple of different levels and is definitely one of the most memorable pieces of WWF television that you would ever see. I do remember in college, we had a wrestling group of people that we would watch the Monday Night Wars together from 98 to 01. And there was one guy who actually had a GIF file of the barbershop window incident as his wallpaper on his computer. Now, when you think about this, a computer in 1998-99 probably could not really handle that. And in fact, his computer would pretty much seize up at all times because he had this wallpaper that was just Shawn Michaels throwing Jannetty through a window so he could watch it at all times. I think that might have been a short-term thing just to show us, but that was always kind of funny. Of course, now we live in such a GIFified or GIFified culture. I'm a GIF guy. We live in such a GIFified culture that I'm surprised more people haven't followed my good friend Mark's lead and made such files the wallpaper on their computer. But as Heenan says, the Rockers are history, and Shawn Michaels would, of course, be off to the races, and we'll have plenty more on him, I'm sure, going forward.
They need each other. You know that.
Sounds fair to me.
He's not going to walk away.
They need each other.
Tag team specialist.
See, one without the other isn't any good.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that. I just knew he was going to do that. He don't need Jannetty.
I told you that off and on.
Are you kidding? What a despicable act that was.
Jannetty tried to dive through the window to escape. Did you see that?
Are you blind?
What an act of cowardism.
Place Simulations, JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of Legend shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Geek's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I was trained by Bruno Sammartino, and he taught me almost everything I know. And it was very hard for me not to talk to Bruno, but I couldn't get myself to talk to the man, and I'm going to tell everybody why. And I want to make this clear to everybody. I do not hate Bruno. I do not disrespect Bruno. But I have to become Larry Zbyszko to survive in my chosen field. in my career. For years now, I've been walking down the street and I've been recognized as, hey, you're the one that Bruno trained, aren't you? And I've been walking down the street for years and people have been come up to me and say, hey, there's Bruno's protege. And I've been getting this all over the world, not just where I live. I've even been getting it from some members of my family that introduced me. This is my nephew, the wrestler. Bruno trained him.
And that is from the January 12th episode of Championship Wrestling, a Larry Zbyszko promo that led to the initial challenge to Bruno Sammartino. And you can see he kind of goes into some, you know, deep places where he talks about being depressed, as being labeled as Bruno's protege, to the point where it's almost funny at the end where he's saying that he's being introduced by members of his own family as Bruno's protege, the wrestler. Now, the challenge here did not exactly come out of nowhere, as on previous episodes, Zbyszko had been kind of ignoring Sammartino. Sammartino would come down to do the interview at ringside after a match or whatnot, and Zbyszko really wouldn't want to face him and talk to him because of this mental issue that he was having of feeling like he was in Bruno's shadow at all times. And this is him just kind of letting out his emotions. A very cathartic 5-minute promo here, and something that seems a little bit more unusual. It's very measured in tone. It's not yelling or screaming or anything. And now Bruno, for his part, he's really taken aback by this because he considers Larry not like a son. Bruno, through this, was very careful to say that Larry was not like a son. He would refer to him as a brother. So there's kind of a difference there in that if you have like a father-son thing, you kind of have one above the other because, you know, the father and the son, you're older, whatever. With brothers, you can kind of treat it as equals. So I think it was important for him to use that terminology. And Vince goes to Bruno at kind of the closing remarks of the show, the final thought, if you will. And Bruno is just, as I said, very nonplussed and isn't quite sure how to react to Larry Zbyszko's challenge to what he said would be a scientific match. And he said two times in the promo, Larry says, I don't hate Bruno. I don't hate Bruno. And wanted to make that clear. But this is what Bruno had to say in response at the end of the January 12th episode.
Well, Vince, it's very difficult for me to respond because I'm still in a state of shock. I feel kind of bad, sad about the whole thing. All I know in my heart is I have a brother and three sons. I love Larry as much as I love my own sons and my brother. And all I've ever tried to do with Larry was to help him the best possible way I could. I never realized that he felt that way. Vince, honest
to
gosh.
What about the challenge, Bruno? He challenged you. What about a match? He challenged you to a match.
I don't want to believe that I heard that. I don't want to believe it in Vince, and I can't even comment on it. I couldn't even talk about it.
So Bruno right now just kind of refusing to believe that Larry really feels that way, and he wants to discuss it with him and doesn't want to throw himself into a match with Larry Zbyszko. So a neat little cliffhanger as they go into next week. Now, you knew that this was kind of a big deal because what they were doing with Larry matches at this point in time in January of 1980 is they were airing it, of course, on Championship Wrestling, but they were airing the identical match on All-Star Wrestling as well. And that was something that was common, that if you really wanted to play it up, you were going to throw the exact same thing on both shows. And you would see that later on where the same thing would be on Superstars and Challenge, particularly Piper's Pit with Hogan and Andre the weekend that it aired on Superstars, as covered in episode 4 of Greetings from Allentown. It also aired on Wrestling Challenge the next day, which would have been February 8th, 1987. So we go to next week, and it's January 19th. It's the last hour of tapings from January 1, 1980, which it's so cool that the actual taping took place on New Year's Day 1980. And what a way to kick off the decade of the 1980s with this one. And we don't have a Larry appearance on January 19th show, but Vince is pressing the point with Bruno, saying that he's gotten a week to process the challenge from Larry Zbysko, and they kind of do the same thing with the Jerry Springer final thought with Bruno and how he feels about the Zbysko challenge.
Me now, ladies and gentlemen, Bruno Sammartino. And Bruno, I know you're in a very tough position. Wrestler extraordinaire, commentator, friend of so many fans, so many wrestlers. But, and I know it's tough for you to react to what has happened as of late with Larry Zbysko, but we have to put you on this spot. I think the fans certainly are deserving of an explanation of how you feel, again, about the challenge that was issued.
I gotta interrupt here for a second, because that is one hell of a filibuster by Vince there. Maybe he missed his calling and should have been a United States Senator. I probably shouldn't have said that, because that might actually give him some ideas, and God knows we have enough McMahons in U.S. politics right now. But it took him, like, literally, he could have said, Bruno, will you accept the challenge? You've had a week to think about it. Instead, he does the Vince McMahon thing where you ask him what time it is and he tells you how a watch works and is built and is operated. It's so circuitous how he gets around to it. Anyway, let's throw it back to Bruno.
By Larry Zbysko, and will you accept his challenge? Will you face Larry Zbysko?
Well, first of all, Vince, let me tell you this, okay? You know, I've had my neck broken, I've had my arm broken, I've had serious injuries, but none of those injuries have hurt me as hurt as I feel right now. And I feel equally bad that Larry feels hurt, which I never knew before. I never knew that he had these feelings that he has expressed. I can't tell you about terrible I feel about this whole thing, because I love the guy like a brother. I've always tried my darnest to hold him back anything and everything that I could show him that would be beneficial to him in his career. He's been the Rookie of the Year the very first year as a pro. He's respected by all wrestlers. The fans all love him. He's been all over the world, and his promoters are always requesting to have his services again because he's such a great wrestler. I thought Larry had the world by the hand, and I thought he was the happiest guy in the world. I have to find this out. I feel crushed. I feel hurt. I feel bad for him because he feels so sad. But now you ask me, will I accept the challenge? Vince, I think you know me a long time, and I like to hope, I believe, all the fans that know me for a long time know that I've never refused a challenge from anyone. But Larry Zbysko, Vince, it's like somebody asking me, Bruno, how about signing a match with your younger brother and go out there and try to hurt him, try to beat him, try to make him say, how in the world could anyone do that? I hope the fans know me. No, I couldn't do it. It just wouldn't be in my heart. There's no way.
Well, let me say this, that there are, and I'm not one of them, I'm just stating in effect what some fans are going to say. Some fans are going to say, Bruno, and I think you've got to face this question, they're going to say, Bruno, come on, are you afraid of Larry Zbysko? Is there a little inkling of cowardice in Bruno Sammartino? I think you're going to have to answer that question.
I hope not. I hope people won't think that way, and I hope they'll be sympathetic to my feelings in this situation. I have to repeat, those who have known me for all the years I've been around, I've faced every opponent in the world that ever came my way. But now you're asking me to meet Larry Zbysko? I repeat, I love this man like I love my own brother, my younger brother. How could I have it in my heart? Nah, if they all feel that way, I'm sorry, but there's no way. I just don't know. It just isn't in me to be able to go in the ring with Larry Zbysko. I can't even imagine it.
How do you feel Larry Zbysko will react to this negative vote, in effect, on your part?
I really don't know. Maybe perhaps he won't be happy. I don't know, because I don't know how to even answer that question. I just hope that he will be sympathetic enough to understand my feelings. I can understand his feeling in wanting me in there. I don't know. I'm so confused and hurt. I can't tell you.
Thanks again. Bruno Sammartino, ladies and gentlemen, with his views. We shall return with the fabulous Hulk Hogan in the following match.
Okay, I'll let that part go about the fabulous Hulk Hogan, as that's what he was going by at that point there. But Bruno, again, in, you know, Bruno was not so much a yeller and a screamer. You know, he did not deliver crazy cocaine-fueled promos like you'd see later in the 80s from Hogan and this and that kind of stuff. He's being very calm and very rational. And, you know, he has 17 years of goodwill with the fans of the WWF. And he, time and again, would talk people into the buildings, selling out Madison Square Garden, the Spectrum, the Boston Garden. He's a god in all of those cities. And he's just calmly explaining that he cannot fight his brother. And this is a story that, again, was told time and again. You had even something as kind of weird as the Undertaker-Kane thing, which is a very beloved angle by people of my generation who were teenagers or younger or even a little bit older growing up in that 1997-98 time period. What they did then, if you recall, was that the Undertaker didn't want to fight his brother. And so it is here, because Bruno considers Larry like a brother. And as I said, it's very important that he says brother instead of son, because it makes it a lot less pejorative. It doesn't relegate Larry to a sort of lower status there. And he's doing this in such a way that you feel for Bruno. He doesn't understand why Larry feels this way. You know, he's a sensitive guy. He's trying to understand why, but he can't go into the ring and hurt Larry. And that actually goes into what happens in the match here, where we'll cover it coming up in what Bruno does during the actual match with Zbyszko, because he doesn't want to hurt Larry because he considers him like a brother. He doesn't want to, yes, brothers fight and all that, but he doesn't want to take him down and make him submit or pin him or anything like that. So Bruno is in kind of a weird place right now on the 19th of January. We go to the next show on January 26th, and now we're on the taping, the same taping as this episode aired on, and Zbyszko has a match, and he does the post-match interview at ringside. But before I get to the interview from after the match with John Buford, I want to comment on the match itself there, which is kind of interesting, because when you watch it from a modern perspective, you're kind of looking for signs that Larry is going to be a little bit heelish, or if he's going to try to break the rules. And he did nothing in the match that would indicate that he was going to be turning heel. So it was very well hidden. Yes, he did fire up at one point and all that, but it's not as if he, you know, started choking Buford when he didn't give a clean break at one point in the corner. So Larry, he's wearing the same trunks as he'd be wearing for the Bruno match later on in the taping. So after the match, he wins with the vertical suplex, and he signals to Vince, kind of over towards, I guess, where they kept the broadcast area there in the old agricultural hall at Allentown, signals for him and Bruno to come on down, because Larry has something to say. And it's at this point here where you kind of feel things starting to turn, in that Larry starts acting like a child, kind of saying it's either going to be my way or the highway.
I came out here a couple weeks ago and I poured my guts out to the fans. I made a statement of my own search and my own quest for self-recognition in my business. I made a challenge and a demand of Bruno, and I heard Bruno's reply. Bruno refused to give me the opportunity I asked for. And I hope you people enjoyed my match today, because as far as I'm concerned, if I can't have a chance to prove myself as me, this is the last match Larry Zbyszko is going to wrestle. I can't exist. I am not going to exist in the business if I have to remain a shadow and a specter. I demanded something out of Bruno, and he didn't feel he should do it. I can't make Bruno do it. I can't make anybody do anything, but I can do for me. And I have to know right now, I'm not going to wrestle again. I want Bruno to come out here, and I want Bruno to say if he wants to wrestle me to my face, or if he doesn't, whatever he wants.
Now, one thing I should add here is during the match with Buford, Vince once again pressed Bruno for an answer on this, if he would wrestle Zbyszko. And this is the third straight week of badgering that Bruno has taken from Vince, and he just flat out says that he's not going to do it. But now he has to go down to ringside, and Larry has kind of made his childish demand of sorts. I mean, you have to call it childish because he's going to take his ball and go home. Well, that's a phrase that would come up in wrestling some 22 years later. But in any event, Bruno is really saddened by the fact that this has happened, and he doesn't want to be responsible for ending a career that he helped get off the ground.
It's true that last week or 2 weeks, whatever it's been, I said that I would never wrestle Larry Zbyszko, and I did mean it. However, I don't want it to be said that Larry's career may be ruined because of my refusal to go in the ring with him, number one. Number two, we've received so much mail from the fans saying that they want me to wrestle Zbyszko. And all the years I've been wrestling, the fans have known me never to run away from any opponent. And I surely will not run away from this particular bout, which I really don't have my heart into it. However, there has to be a compromise here. I will go into the ring with Larry under these conditions. I will go in there to give him the opportunity to prove to the fans that he's a better man than I, if that's what he wants, okay? For myself, I am not interested to go into that ring and defeat Larry Zbyszko. So what I will do is this. I will accommodate the fans. If they do want me to go in there, I will. I will accommodate.
You can hear the response here.
I will please Larry Zbyszko into proving what he's been, what's been haunting him all this time, which I had no knowledge of. However, I will say this. If Larry wants to try and beat me, fine. I will do everything in my power to stop him from beating me. As far as him trying to out-wrestle me, he'll have to be better, because I will do everything in my power to keep my reputation at stake. But what I will not do is I'm not going to go in that ring and try to defeat Larry Zbyszko, because I could not find it in my heart to apply a hold on him and say, quit or I'll break your arm, because I still regard Larry Zbyszko, I have the same love for him as I have for one of my brothers. And I do not find it in my heart to go in there and hurt Larry or try to defeat him. However, I will say this, that since Larry wanted this badly, he's going to have to show the fans and everybody and himself that he is the better man, because I will give nothing in there.
Wow. I feel like I'm an English professor here breaking down some sort of Shakespearean tragedy here, but that's a tremendous promo from Bruno, and part of it is the subtle emotions that he's conveying to the audience and how just completely conflicted he is about doing this. Now, this is why it's important to kind of know the build of the Bruno and Larry match. If you know the generalities of the story, and if you've watched Best of the WWF Volume 1, and you see this match in a vacuum, you see it as protege turns on the mentor, da-da-da, but there's just so much more put into this, and there's so much more emotion behind it, helped by this build, because not only of Larry's promos, because he's obviously, this couldn't have been done without him, but because of Bruno and just his massive appeal to the audience and all the goodwill capital, I guess, kind of an interesting term since his Capital Wrestling Corporation, that he had built up with that audience. I mean, you turn on Bruno, I mean, In a vacuum, though, it's a lot different watching this than having seen this stuff that all came before. And it's yet another reason why I love having all this footage on YouTube to go see, to really dive in and dig into the whole history of whatever you want to know about the wrestling business. So without any further ado, they have a little match on this show, February 2nd, 1980. I've done a lot of talking here to build up to this historic match, and you're probably wondering, in terms of the angle itself, whose idea was it to pull the trigger with this? Well, it was not Vince McMahon Sr., who, by all accounts that I've researched and read about, was against the idea, feeling that it wouldn't draw money. But what happened was Bruno stepped in and spoke up for the idea, so it was really Bruno that kind of pushed that across the finish line. And Larry Zbyszko has said that in various shoot interviews, but with Larry in shoot interviews, I have to keep the BS filter clean at all times, because there's a lot of it from him in some of those, but from discerning all different accounts of what happened and what went into this, I do believe that it was Bruno's idea to put this together, to kind of put Larry over, not necessarily lose to Larry Zbyszko on the way out, but this was a way of making him before Bruno was, he was obviously planning to step away from the business. He had tried to retire in the past and was just unable to for whatever reason. And of course, his retirement in 1981 would not last very long, because he would be back in the announce booth in 1984, and then he would be back in the ring in 1985, all kind of in support of his actual birth son, David, in that case. Another thing about this match is the concept of the scientific match. And I haven't really done a lot of comedy, or as my wife says that I do, alleged comedy. And the term scientific match has always tickled me for a very long time. And the joke in college was, whenever it would be a scientific match, you know it's not truly scientific until you see the Bunsen burner and the Erlenmeyer flask. Is it Erlenmeyer flask or Erlenmeyer flask? I don't know. I always got C's in science. And I was more of a brawler than a scientist in high school. So here we are with Bruno and Larry, and we have Dick Worley, of course, as the referee, which he bothers me for a different reason, and it's because he wears a different outfit than the other referees on this show. And it's like, what makes you so special, Dick Worley? Who do you think you are? Danny Davis? Danny Davis down the line would wear like khaki pants for the Boston Garden House show, while all the other refs were dressed the way referees were supposed to be dressed. So the biggest match that we've done on this show, and of course it is the logo of the show, which funny story about the logo for Greetings from Allentown. It was something that I threw together in about 21 minutes while trying to get the show on iTunes around episode 1 or episode 2, somewhere in that time. It was definitely after the first episode was released, because I hadn't even established the full SoundCloud account yet. At that time, I originally put it up on the blog for download, where it had to be under, I think, 60 megs or something like that. And I was trying to figure out something that would capture the essence of something that was named Greetings from Allentown. And my mind kind of went to, okay, in the time period 1978 to 1984, what was the most famous thing that happened in the arena in Allentown? And it was this match, and it's not even close. And it also helped that there were a number of clean pictures that worked in, both Bruno and Larry just facing off with the ring. It's a really nice background. And the cursive writing there, I don't know why I chose that. Maybe it just reminded me of the quote-unquote Caddyshack font that they use for the credits at the beginning of Caddyshack, for all the names, you know, Ted Knight and Chevy Chase and all that. So that's kind of what got it. Anyway, I've spent enough time with this build-up, so let's get to the match. Okay. Okay. Now, this is extremely rare for Bruno to be on TV. As a matter of fact, I can't find any record of Bruno actually wrestling in a match on the weekly TV. I feel like it must have happened at some point in his heyday, but at least in the records that I'm looking at Cage Match, I can't find anything. I'm not going to dig too deep here because obviously I've done enough stalling here. So just get right to the match here. They're very tentative going in. They're both a little unsure. And when they lock up, Bruno keeps breaking clean. Larry tries to go for the leg, either a single leg takedown or whatever, and Bruno evades that. Bruno executes a standing switch, and then Larry can't execute the standing switch, and before he even gets a real chance to, the hold is released by Bruno. And remember, this is what Bruno said he was going to do. He wasn't going to try to win the match, pin Larry, or make him submit. Vince here kind of, you know, in this ultra serious match here, kind of makes me laugh given what we know about Vincent Kennedy McMahon now that probably was not the case in 1980. Quote, scientific wrestling skill, that's the name of the game. Like, wow, that's very odd to hear Vince say something like that. Larry with a hip toss and goes down for a quick two and then a shoulder block. He follows with that. Then you get a drop toe hold by Bruno. And one thing I'm really taken by early in this match is just how quick Larry Zbyszko is. The Zbyszko that we all know is probably the one later in the 80s, either in the NWA or the AWA, who, like I've joked about many times now, was a staller, not exactly the most dynamic in-ring guy, but he is quick as a cat at this point when he's 28 years old. Slam by Larry, gets another two count, but then Bruno responds with a slam of his own, and Larry is starting to get a little upset there. You can tell he kind of hits the mat there. The two guys are back tentative again. They do a nice pose for the logo of this show, and then you get a wrist or hammerlock by Bruno, who releases the hold again. So we're back to square one here, and Larry gets an abdominal stretch. And Bruno ends up powering out of it with a hip lock. So he's using his size advantage there. Again, I have my kayfabe hat firmly in place. The chin strap is buckled for this match. Another slam by Larry, and he gets his third two count of the match. And then he scores with a single leg takedown into a half crab. And it was kind of interesting here in that Bruno could have grabbed the rope there, and he didn't. Instead, he did a rollover to counter instead of doing that and gets out of the hold that way. So once again, frustration building slightly for Larry. Wrist lock by Bruno, but then he releases it again. And it kind of seemed like it was for no reason. Vince said he didn't want his strength tested or whatever. I thought that was a strange remark given that Bruno is this, you know, he's basically a strong man from Italy. I mean, that's kind of who he is. And it's really because that's what he said he was going to do. He wasn't going to make Larry submit to a wrist lock or whatever. Then we get a crisscross, which more famously, you'd see the crisscross in the Hogan Ultimate Warrior. They seem to like that spot a lot. But Bruno reverses Larry's hip toss attempt into one of his own. Now the anger level rising. I think you can raise the Larry Z threat level from yellow to orange at this point. Of course, that's now kind of a dated reference that I'm making there. Larry runs the ropes here, and he ends up in a bear hug. And that bear hug, one of Bruno's finishing maneuvers of the time, and after a beat of about 5 seconds or so, Bruno just releases the hold. And even I, in kayfabe, have to say that that kind of looks bad by Bruno. He is a man of his word, and that meant a hell of a lot in 1980 to the fans. But when you look at it with a critical eye, you would say, Bruno, you said you weren't going to pin him or make him submit. Why are you putting him in the bear hug, which is one of your big moves? probably should not have used the move. Or if you are going to use the move, maybe just try to win the match then and there. Go back on your word this one time instead of releasing the hold after 5 seconds, because it did kind of make Larry look like a chump there. And Larry's threat level is rising again. And he's more pissed off now. And now now here comes the big spot here. Larry gets a hammer lock, and Bruno is looking for the escape there, and he goes to the near side of the ring from the camera perspective, and Larry, they end up slipping, and Larry ends up falling to the outside. So, oops, there, that Bruno did not mean to do that, and he confers with the referee. I'll take off my kayfabe hat and helmet right now. He's handed something by the referee. Wonder what that might be. But Bruno feels bad here. Kayfabe hat back on. And he opens the rope for Larry to come back in. And Larry was kind of pacing on the outside trying to collect his thoughts. But now you can raise threat level to red, because Larry, as he's getting into the ring, knees Bruno in the gut and then starts just working him over. Ends up throwing him into the corner turnbuckle. Bruno collapses center of the ring. and Larry heads to the outside. And in a fun bit of irony here, given Bruno's disdain for the steroid culture that would envelop the WWF in the years to come, Larry steals the chair of Dr. George Zaharian, the doctor behind much of that stuff that was going on, who would be convicted in the early 90s of such shenanigans and whatnot. So he grabs the wooden chair, and referee Dick Worley tries to get in the way, and Worley gets tossed for his trouble. Not the best ref toss in the world. He just kind of throws him into the ropes, and Worley kind of gets stuck there for a second and looks like a fish out of water or whatever. So Worley's out of the picture now. And Larry has got the chair, and he's measuring Bruno. And Larry whacks Bruno in the head with the wooden chair, and he really measures him good. It's not a full swing of the chair like you would see from... He kind of does it in a three-quarters kind of way that makes it look like he's not swinging it as hard as he can. The way I take it is that he's trying to hit Bruno in a precise spot. He's not going for bat speed here. He's there to make sure he's making contact. I don't know if he choked up on the chair or something to make sure that he hit Bruno just right, but he nails him with the chair, and Bruno goes down like a ton of bricks. And then he does it again two more times, and it's the crowd here. When Larry knees Bruno in the gut coming back into the ring, you can sense kind of a change in the air, like kind of a hush falls over the crowd a bit. And then the crowd starts screaming. It's not really, really loud screaming, because the crowd is still trying to process what's going on here. This isn't, you know, like a Memphis beatdown on the floor or whatever. They're not crazy, but it does build as it goes along. And Bruno is left face down, bleeding all over the mat. They have to spend some time later trying to clear the blood off the mat there. And this was a incredibly effective use of the blood, because to see Bruno Sammartino, the legend of legends, the living legend, just laid out, and they bring out the stretcher for him, and they take Bruno out on a stretcher. This is how you make a guy. It's just awesome stuff. And there's often I like to critique, oh, well, you could have done this, you could have, there's nothing else they could have done. It was absolutely perfect the way this was executed, from soup to nuts, from the original Larry ignoring Bruno and his promos, and then Bruno's kind of unsure promos where he doesn't want to fight a guy that he considers a brother. The way this was all put together was just perfect. And much like the Mega Powers breakup, in 1989, which of course started in 1988, I wouldn't change anything about this. It's just perfect wrestling from start to finish. And it made Larry Zbysko what he would become. Now, Larry would not... it always seems in retrospect, well, why didn't he get the world title out of this? And there was probably some thought given to that, but New York, of course, was a babyface territory. They would have your Bruno or your Pedro Morales or your Bob Backlund at that time running on top. And the heel champions were mere transition champions, with the exception of Graham, who you could actually argue that his reign of 10 months was an actual transitional reign, because he knew he was going to be losing it at the point that he got it, 10 months from the point that he won the title from Bruno. So what happened here, of course, is they had matches in the territory to build up, and the big blow-off would be at Shea Stadium in August of 1980. That card is on YouTube, and it's a very odd card in that the announcers are Michael Cole and Mick Foley. I'm not entirely clear on what happened to the original footage of it, or if there was no commentary at the beginning. I would have sworn that Vince did original commentary, but they re-recorded it with Michael Cole, who I know takes a lot of crap, but he's actually not that bad on that show. And Foley, at least, was, you know, a kid at the time and can kind of bring that perspective. I know he gets some criticism these days in some circles, but it's a perfectly fine card to watch. And the blow-off in the cage, Bruno leaves Larry Lehen and escapes the cage before, I think it's 36,000 at Shea Stadium, so one hell of a gate for the WWF then. Now, Larry, a year from this time, 1981, he's out of the WWF, and it just seems completely bizarre why a guy who was so hot of a heel that people were turning over his car and fans were looking to attack him, why was he gone? Well, it always comes back to the almighty dollar, and Larry felt that his payoff for the Shea Stadium show was not quite up to snuff. But there was also other issues as well, since he went down to the Intercontinental level when Pedro won the title at the very end of the year, but he wasn't going to be given that title either. So what he decided was, rather than to stick around and be jobbing to Tony Atlas, who we're going to be seeing coming up next here, that he would just leave and kind of protect the reputation that he had built up in the WWF at that time. And he goes elsewhere, and it's just never quite the same. Of course, he was the AWA champion, but that was in 1989, when that title was not of the same prestige that it was, let's say, earlier in the 1980s. And I don't know, Larry never came back to the WWF to wrestle after that time. And of course, he was always linked with Bruno. And Bruno, when he came back in 1984, there was always the rumor that Larry was going to come in as well and perhaps feud with David San Martino. But that just never ended up happening, and Larry wrestled elsewhere for the rest of his career. And it was just one of those things where he had his big moment here, and he lived off it for the rest of his career, which was about a decade and a half. He was still in WCW in the mid-1990s. I don't think I'm going to count his little feud with Scott Hall around that 97-98 time period. Although Larry Z does deserve credit for his role in the New World Order angle of 96, 97, and 98. He was one of the announcers who would actually kind of, quote, stand up to them. And he had the match with Bischoff at Starcade 97 that, of course, was a bit of a mess, but that's not entirely his fault. It's just the way it's just the way that WCW was. But Larry Zbyszko, you're always left wondering if he could have been a world champion. I don't know if, based on what his working style ended up becoming, but the heat that he was able to generate from this one angle was just incredible, and it's really amazing stuff. And of course, we owe a lot of this to Bruno, and he truly is the living legend of professional wrestling.
How can you stop the rain from falling down?
How can you stop the sun from shining? What makes the world go round?
How can you mend this broken man? How can a loser ever win?
Quick epilogue to this: on next week's Championship Wrestling, February 9th, 1980, Bruno gives an amazing promo, which I'm going to have to play here in its entirety, or, well, at least until Vince just interrupts Bruno in the middle of this heartfelt speech that he's giving in an empty arena interview. You have Vince interviewing Bruno, and what's really interesting is they're sitting on the exact style of chair that Bruno got whacked with three times by Larry. So you just have these two men, and they're surrounded by the exact weapon used to break Bruno's heart, as it were. For whatever reason, the promo made me think of the Bee Gees song, "How Can You Mend a Broken Heart?" I'm no Gibb brother, I'll say that. But Bruno, of course, you know, he's a godfather-like figure, and he has rightfully feels betrayed. But it's not a yelling and screaming, "I'm going to get you, Zbyszko," or anything like that. It's very calm, and it builds. Of course, like I said, up until Vince just interrupts him and said, "We'll see you next week." And I'm going to play, I got to play that, because this is an all-time promo right here.
How do I feel? It's, how do you describe how I feel? You know, in my life, I came from Italy. I lived in the mountains. I've known poverty. I've seen friends, relatives, members of my family die during a war, an ugly war. Talk about heartaches, talk about really being broken up, feeling like it was the end. I thought I'd experienced all the ugliness that can occur in one's life. I really thought that, yeah, that I had my bad share of hardness in life. What am I saying? I'm saying that I went to sleep last night after coming out of the hospital, where, as you know, I had to have transfusions, so loss of blood. Talk about nightmares. I had a long nightmare, because I, without sleeping a wink, I paced the floor, I sat, I laid in bed, and I kept saying to myself, this is a nightmare. I got to be sleeping and imagining, dreaming this thing. But no, it wasn't. it wasn't a nightmare. It's a reality that I can't bring myself up to believe in to this point. Speaking of heartaches and broken hearts that one often hears, what is a broken heart? One can imagine. I've had my heart broken through my lifetime, remembering those days as a child in the war and members of the family and all this stuff. But I know today my heart is broken like I never knew a heart could be broken. Here's a man that I loved as much as one could love a brother. I always felt of Larry as my younger brother. I loved him like my brother. He had frustrations that I didn't understand, but then I tried to understand. He felt that I was holding him back. I, of all the people on this earth, never want to hold Larry Zbyszko back because I care too much for the man. And this hurt. You asked me if I'd want to even wrestle the man. I don't want no part of going to the ring with Larry Zbyszko, but I give it a lot of thought. The amount of mail we received asking me that I should wrestle Larry Zbyszko. I felt hurt, Vince, in different ways because even the mail, I always loved my fans because they've been so good to me for so many years. I felt a little hurt that they wanted me to wrestle Zbyszko, suggesting him perhaps, why was I afraid of him? I've never feared any man. I always had confidence in myself in the ring. But I brought myself up to it, to wrestle Larry, to satisfy him, to have him achieve whatever he was out to achieve, and to satisfy the fans because they wanted to see it. Against my wish, against my feelings, I didn't want to do it. Here's the man, Larry Zbyszko, the man that I so cared about, so believed in, Vince, in my busy schedule as I traveled the world over. I'd come home every once in a while, sometimes not home for 3 weeks at a time without coming home seeing my family. I have a family that I love dearly. I have a mother and father that are so special and I love them so dearly. I have a sister that I love with my heart and soul and her family as well as my brother. And I saw so much in this talent, this great talent. I so believe that here is a man. Here's a man who is so gifted that could contribute so much to this game that I've loved so much. And I took time from deprived my whole family because I wanted to take time because I thought...
Bruno, thank you for your reflections.
All right, to be fair to Vince there, he did kind of cut him off when Bruno was... Again, it was a slow build in just anger in Bruno that he's trying to express there, and he kind of cut him off before things could have gone a little bit out of control. Out of all those, my favorite one to do was the Bruno and Larry one because I was able to see so much of this footage for the first time that I had heard about on, you know, stuff like Titans of Wrestling. They had talked about it well before I ever did, but I had never actually seen the footage for myself until I was able to seek it out on YouTube for the very brief period that the stuff was actually on there. So I'm glad I did that episode in the window that I did. And despite going over the build for that for quite a while, I spent more time on that than probably anything else that I've ever done in the history of the show. I still missed one thing from when the challenge is accepted by Bruno and they agree to have the match. They're standing at ringside with Vince, and eventually a guy comes up and whispers in Larry's ear because Larry had forgotten to mention that the match was going to be on TV, apparently. So kind of important that you're building to this thing that's going to air on television. You might want to tell the viewers that tune in next week for Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbyszko, and you're going to see something really, really cool. So we're back on track here, and I think next week I'm going to ease myself in with probably a fairly easy show for me to cover, something entertaining, maybe something with commercials, so I can kind of riff on that for a little bit and get back to sort of feeling like myself again. Not sure what that is. I'm looking at a couple of things. I saw an episode of All Star Wrestling from
1985, this would be Gorilla and Jesse on the call. And I think that's a combination that I have not covered, because that's something what we're much more familiar with from pay-per-view. But they did all start wrestling together from July of 1985 up through Jesse's extended hiatus that started around the time of WrestleMania 2. So do tune in next Thursday for another exciting episode of Greetings from Allentown.
Going to do that. I just knew he was going to do that. He don't need Jannetty. I told you that off and on. Jannetty tried to dive through the window to escape.